It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I have just begun a new campaign on the Adventure Zone podcast, the gaming one that the McElroys do, which I highly recommend for people who love actual play podcasts. It's a very good one. They're a fun time. This particular one is called Graduation, and it is, they're actually playing it as D&D again, but it is an incredibly thinly veiled version of basically Hogwarts. It is a fantasy school for, they're particularly in the annex that is for henchmen and sidekicks, but whatever. It is one of those where the school in question specifically trains up heroes and villains. Now, I will say this for this one. They've actually come up with a reason that makes sense, where the concept of hero and villain are more political based and have to do with sort of making a locale popular. Like a hero and a villain get assigned to like a region and they fight all the time to make it exciting and people want to come see or whatever, and there's not any like things happen, but like they don't generally kill people. It's like the villains do bad stuff, but it's not awful. And in fact, this is a thing. Like there's a governing body that determines what heroes and villains can and can't do. And there is a classification known as evil, which means you have stepped outside those bounds and no longer legally can be a hero or a villain. And in fact, but then you can still teach, which is a whole other thing. But my point is, they did a really good job with this concept of, this is a school that teaches you to be good or bad, but it's not a new trope.
Right.
It happens in a lot of premises. The Fable games had this, the Adventurers Guild there. There was that book series that became a Netflix show, The School of Good and Evil or whatever. It's become a fantasy, especially trope. And I understand it mechanically within a video game. Like in Fable, it's because you get to decide and you can become good or you can become evil. And that's mechanically why it's there. But narratively, I kind of think this is one of the dumbest things ever. Like, what? Like, why would you do that? Like, what you're saying is, we want to train people to do big shit. We don't care if it's cool shit or horrific shit, but we just want to make sure whatever these people do, it has the largest impact possible, regardless of ethics or morals. Like, and to a degree, even Harry Potter has this, because again, Slytherin's not officially the evil house, but Slytherin's basically the evil house. And like, we're chill with that. Like, can you justify this for me narratively? Because it just seems real, real dumb. I understand why it's a useful jumping off point, but just the base premise, I'm like, this is the extreme version of like when you and I talk about Hunger Games and you're like, this is not how this would go down. I'm like, this, no one would ever do this. This would never be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and we know in the real world, the people who perpetrate what is popularly considered the the worst evils, they think they're the good guys, obviously. They're not sitting there saying,
the institutions in the real world are like, we are raising up the leaders and influences of tomorrow. But they're not like, and again, I guess they don't specify, but they're not like, we're raising up the really good and really bad leaders and influences. I mean, that is what they're doing, but I don't feel like that's the goal.
Yeah. So no, it doesn't. When I've seen these things, like, I think Disney does this with the school that's raising villains and good guys and stuff. I don't understand it because, even when I was a kid, you know, you had the Legion of Doom. It's like, these people are, they want to be evil. I mean, I guess it was okay in a cartoon and it sort of as a joke, but it's like, that's not how it really works.
Well,
ever.
Yeah, I get more into that because I like villains that think they're villains, that know they're villains, because I appreciate the sort of sociopathic tendency. Because as somebody who consider myself a nihilist, and I consider the fact that I want to make people happy and safe and secure or whatever to be a quirk of my personality.
Mm.
Not because of any external force. So I absolutely understand the idea of somebody who has the same core beliefs about how society and the universe work, who is like, no, I just like fucking shit up. I just want to see the world burn. I'm not that guy, but that guy and I can share the same worldview.
But then how would
probably not a quote I want somebody to pull later.
How would a person like that form a club with other people like that? That's the next question.
It would be hard to, I mean, the great thing is in a world like that, it's just the people wearing costumes and robbing banks. Like it's a very simple Venn diagram. You're like, right. You are my kind of person.
Yeah. But to be fair, there are people who live, again, what would popularly, colloquially be called a criminal lifestyle. And they know they live a criminal lifestyle. And they kind of get a kick and a thrill out of it. But even they, I think, when you talk to them, they think of themselves almost like political dissidents, right? It's like, well, you know, this world structure doesn't, I don't fit in it. So why shouldn't I take from it or steal from it or whatever I'm doing?
Moral relativism in general. They're actually, yeah. I just saw the teaser trailer for the Thunderbolts movie. Looks terrible. Not going to watch it anyway. But in that, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character has a little line where she says, most people think there are good people and bad people, but it's not true. There's bad people and there's worse people. And there are people who believe that. And they can be sort of criminals. But just this idea that, like, we're going to work hard to train you to commit terrible atrocities.
Well, and sometimes,
while also training the people who will stand against you.
Yeah. Sometimes it seems like the way you're supposed to think of it is like there's sports teams, right? Like, why do you, the people we're training to be evil, why are we training you this? Well, because you have to beat those people. Just basically in open competition. That's really all it is. It's not really about evil per se. It's about, I have to beat that person, whoever they are. And that person, behaves in a certain stereotypically heroic way, whatever that means, but it's just, this is a team and this is a team and we're treating you to fight each other and someone wins.
And in the Adventure Zone thing, that's what it is.
Mm.
Like, it's very much performative, at least so far. I've only listened to the first episode of it. And literally there's financial incentive. And again, there's a very limit on what you can do. And in fact, I love it. One of the NPCs already, she's a villain. And the reason she's a villain is her whole deal is necromancy. And she's like, yeah, they kind of make you. But, like, the whole thing is she is one of the nicest, most upbeat, friendliest people in the world and has lots of close friends who are heroes and things in the school. But she has to be a villain because that's the thing. And it's just, it is a team. But that only works if your villain isn't nuking cities or, murdering children or, I mean, like, villains do fucked up shit in these things. Where, I mean, the Fable games, the villains in the Fable games are fucked up.
Well, maybe it's a little like if you had wrestling has good guys and bad guys, right? So it would maybe it's a little like that, except the bad guys are allowed to rob a bank sometimes. And if they can get away with it, they can keep the money. But the police can't intervene. It's got to be a hero that intervenes. And if the heroes can't stop them, well, they get the money. That's how that works.
And when the stakes are low or strictly financially or whatever, like that's fine. But if you're actually ruining lives and or hurting and killing people, and too many of these that take that premise still do that. And in fact, all the ones where it's a school, inevitably somebody who's like on the evil track or in the evil house, shockingly, comes up with a plan where they're gonna murder like everybody in the school. It's like,
Yeah, it's
what are you doing? What
pretty
is what?
predictable.
Stupid.
But in kids shows, when there's good guys and bad guys, the bad guys are almost always just robbing banks. I mean, that's all they're doing, robbing
They never,
banks or coming up with some other financial scheme, or they don't even
Which
do
is
other
why.
gangster things like protection rackets or anything like that. It's strictly robbing
Yeah,
banks or
but it's,
museums.
and that's also why in the millennial era of sort of recontextualizing this, like the 90s and the 2000s were full of kids cartoons that were sort of self-aware about that kind of stuff. The villains are often like deeply sympathetic in some way, and they're just doing it because they want friends or whatever like that. Or they're so, you get like a Doofenshmirtz character from Phineas and Ferb where it's like he's evil, but he sucks so bad at it, and his life is so sad that you just feel bad for him. But some of them, because when they first announced it in this podcast, I was like, God damn it. But then he explained it, and I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. I like that. But it made me think. I'm like, this is a trope that's around a lot now, and it makes no goddamn sense. This is right up there with the one that is really bugging me, is really prevalent, and it's one of those that's, I don't think people think about it when they're doing it, but I've spoken on it before. When you are the antagonist, but you are doing it begrudgingly in a sort of greater good kind of way, which totally fine with this concept. I mean, I very much don't believe in the concept of greater good, but I understand people. I can see that viewpoint. But then you act like a fucking villain. Like you get real nasty and shitty to people. And I'm like, if your whole deal is that I know this is rough, but I have to do it, then stop looking so fucking smug when you killed my sister or whatever. Like you should feel sad about that. Not like, oh, too like and cracking jokes about the murders you did and shit. And it happens all the time. And I'm like, no, that person is into being evil. That person is not greater good. That person is like, hey, I came up with a loophole where I can just be a monster. Isn't it awesome? And I'm like, in which case, just admit it. Far, far too many of these where, because I like the idea. Like, oh, see it from their side. This becomes a moral quandary because frequently it becomes some variant of a trolley problem. And you're like, oh, what do you stand for? It's like, okay, but the guy who flipped the switch, like, really got into watching that dude die. He was like the trolley was coming. He was like, hey, Dylan, hope you're comfy because it's about to get real bumpy. Like, why would no? He'd be like, I'm sorry, Dylan. This is awful, I know, but there's like, you can't have both. And
Nope, that's right.
they're doing it all the time. Pisses me off. One of my favorite villains, and I really want to rewatch this movie, is from a 90s sci-fi movie at the height of the time where we learned that computers could do anything, but we still had no idea what computers could do. There was a movie called Virtuosity.
Yeah, I remember that.
Had an absolute banger of a soundtrack. I bought that CD and wore it out. Loved that soundtrack. And it's Denzel Washington versus Russell Crowe. And Russell Crowe is a virtual villain that combined the brain scans or whatever of a bunch of different villains to make this thing, and then things happen and he gets out in the real world. Whatever. The point is, I loved him because he was that psychopath. He was like, I'm bad and awful, and I'm super into it. And I'm like, I love that kind of. I mean, I understand the villains don't often think they're villain, but I love a good scenery chewing, because that's the thing. If you're gonna be a villain, if you're like, you know what, I am gonna fuck shit up, like, own it. Like, it's not like you can be like, I committed the genocide, but I feel bad. It's like, no, if you're on board to commit the genocide, go for it. Be like, that entire race I'm killing, they sucked. Isn't it funny that they're gone now because of me? Like, get into it. And he's very, and it helps. He's very charming in it and all that kind of thing too. Very charismatic villain. But that's the kind of villain I want, or one who is genuinely reluctant about it. But far too often it's one who's like, no, I do this because I have to. Like, you say you're doing this for the greater good, but you're still twirling your mustache.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Pick a lane.
Exactly. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world with one hero and one villain. And not in a political sense. William saved some orphans last week, and I murdered a bus full of nuns in between the two episodes we just recorded. I told you I was going to go pee, but I actually went and murdered nuns. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 708.
707.
707 was the last one.
707.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Was it not? Think it
No, I
was.
think you're right. I think you're right. I don't know. I don't know. I don't get this podcasting thing. If you're just joining us for the first time, go back to the previous episode and listen to how it's explained. I don't want to do it. And we just did a new one. When did we start recording? I lost track. All right, whatever. So at this point, when this will air, I'm in Oregon. Specifically, I am in a rental property near the town of Oceanside, Oregon, not to be confused with the town of Seaside, Oregon, which is very close to Oceanside. It's near Tillamook, Cape Mears, Rockaway Beach. For those of you who know Oregon geography, it's probably about an hour directly south of Astoria, maybe only half hour, I don't know. It's around there. It's up in the northwest corner of Oregon. And in fact, it's very possible that today my family is coming to visit from the valley to see the rental property and stuff like that, and possibly go to eat lunch at a restaurant that my mother and my father used to eat at a lot and really liked. So we'll see, but that's where I am. By the next week, I'll still be out there, but I plan to record from there, so hopefully you guys will get to see the rental property because it really looks amazing. Very excited. Have you heard me talk about short-timer syndrome?
No, I don't think so.
I feel like it's a term I coined, because I've never heard anybody else say it, but it is a thing that have the most common version of it is you are in a job and you have put in your notice because you're going on to something else. And it's really hard to give a shit about your job for those last 2 weeks, but there are tons of variants of it. And another version is you are at your job and you have a vacation coming up, and it's really hard to give a damn about your work, and you just are like, I just want this over. Like,
right.
Can we just jump to the part where I don't have a job, but I'm feeling that right now. I'm like, I don't want to deal with life right now. Chores, groceries, bills. No, I'm on vacation. I want to be on vacation right now. So I have been suffering for that for about the last week, and I still have a week before we leave. But I'm really just like, I am not here for this. So that's been a little rough for me. And I can't even make the time pass with weed because I'm taking a break from that right now. Mostly because it's legal in Oregon, and it's cheap, and it's really good there. And I'm going to be on vacation, so you better believe it'll be a fun time there. But so that one of the very basic practical things about weed is it helps pass time because it makes you okay with being bored. And so you can just chill. So if there's ever a situation where you're honestly like, I don't need to do anything productive, I just want time to move faster, then do that. But right now, stone cold summer. And so everything's creeping on. I don't want to be out of here. Anyway, how will your week have been?
Well, let's see. This is going to be on the 10th of October when people see this.
Probably.
So I probably, you know, working at the office, which is great, but we're probably going out on the weekends, and we will have gone out one weekend in October because that's, there only will have been one in October before the 10th to see if the leaves are changing, and leaves are changing around here fairly early, it seems like. So we'll probably enjoy some time. We'll have enjoyed some time out in at the Corbett Lake or Reservoir, whatever you want to call it. And probably be looking forward to doing that again this coming weekend.
That is one of the cool things about going to the Pacific Northwest this time of year. The leaves should look fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're very excited about that part. In general, October is a real good time. The weather usually hasn't gone to absolute shit yet. It's the off season for like coastal tourists and things like that, and it's cooled off from the summer because they get pretty hot summers out there now. They didn't use it, but it's, again, it's not cold yet, so it's a pretty good time. And you know, the leaves and the apples or
Well, you'll be further north, so there probably will be some changes in the leaves when you're there, I would suspect. Very cool.
So I'm assuming you haven't started Agatha All Along yet.
I'm not sure when we will.
They apparently are really planning it, so like the last two episodes are going to drop the week of Halloween.
Oh, okay.
I feel like we might watch what we can while we're in Oregon, because we're going to be watching a lot of things because we're very lazy people who just hang around. And it won't be done yet, but it'll be close enough, because in general, I don't like to wait week to week on things.
Me neither.
But I can do a little bit. It doesn't always have to be completely done.
Okay.
So we'll see. And also, it's the timing. I don't, if it doesn't drop until Halloween, that means I would mostly be watching it in November, which defeats the purpose. And I am really excited for it. As much as I fucking hate the MCU now, I'm very excited for that show. I think it's, I adore Catherine Hahn. I adore Patti LuPone. I adore Aubrey Plaza. I like witchy shit. I'm very excited. So I hope that's going to be really cool, but we'll see. I'll be curious to see what we watch while we're out there. I'm sure we will watch a fair bit of stuff, but I already watched some things.
Yeah, you were going to talk about two more movies.
Longtime listeners, by which I mean from last week, will remember that I watched four movies and I only talked about two of them.
That's right.
All right, so I don't remember how this came about. And full disclosure, we were absolutely sober when we watched this, and we probably shouldn't have been. But it came up that Trish had never seen the 1990 sci-fi action comedy Demolition Man, starring Sylvester Stallone, Sandra Bullock, and Wesley Snipes. And I had seen it years ago and remembered it as being pretty fun. So she's like, let's watch it. I was like, okay, we'll watch it. Have you seen it?
I think so. I mean, like, not in the theater or anything, but I think
Yeah.
I have. I think I have, yeah.
I've been kind of revisiting, like, now that I missed out because I wasn't, I don't know if I wasn't the right age, I wasn't the right temperament or whatever. 80s and 90s action films, like most of Stallone and Schwarzenegger's oeuvre, basically, I wasn't there for.
Yeah, me
And
neither.
now it's really sort of fun to go back and watch, again, sort of from an anthropological perspective in a way, because it's like this is what we thought was normal. Demolition Man is a deeply silly movie. It, as an action movie, it's fine, it's cool, it's got some good shit in it. As a sci-fi, it's ridiculous. It just the world of the future makes no sense.
No.
But well, what cracks me up is in a featuring character, they cast Dennis Leary in a part that's not necessarily a Dennis Leary part, except there is one point where, sort of for almost no reason, he gives a monologue that is. Remember when Dennis Leary was just the dude who gave the bitchy monologues?
And
And he would
smoke,
do it in
chain
his stand
smoking.
up. Yeah, and he's like, I don't want to do this. And it was very fast and it was very clipped about how society sucks or whatever. He basically has one of those in the middle of this movie to the degree that I'm like, he might have written. I don't, because it's a dead on. But like, that's the clearly the only reason, because the rest of the part is pretty generic. Anybody could do that part, but that was it. But the thing that bugs me the most, and you will not be surprised about this, because this is a thing, and I'm gonna go back to the Ur example of this for me. The Jedi ruled galactic civilization for 10,000 years during a particularly crazy couple of years. They eventually got completely wiped out, except as time goes on, it turns out so many of them did not. But anyway, completely wiped out. And the civilization they had control over didn't go away. It's not like it was an apocalypse. It just got taken over by a fascist government. But like, it's not like the planets were like, other than certain exceptions, like everybody still lived and worked where they lived and worked and da 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 da. It was the same society. It just been, the government had been radically changed. A teenager number of years later, however old Luke's supposed to be in episode four, nobody's heard of Jedi and they're supposed to be a myth. The fuck?
The explanation I've often heard about that is they were already in some decline before, and they already weren't didn't have much of a presence in various parts of the galaxy.
Which would work if it wasn't the fact that every single movie, prequels and original trilogy, take place on the same like five worlds.
No, right. Yeah. So I don't
These are the people who definitely would know.
know.
It's so dumb. And that's what happens here. For those of you not familiar with Demolition Man, it's one of those movies where so in the 80s, a lot of sci-fi movies theorized You know, in a few years, New York's just gonna be a post-apocalyptic wasteland that's
Yeah.
run by street gangs, and cops will be too scared to go there and will build walls and shit like that. Typified by John Carpenter's Escape from New York. And then in the 90s, everybody was like, oh, no, wait, sorry. We meant LA. LA is gonna be like that.
LA, yeah.
Typified by John Carpenter's Escape from LA.
Yeah.
So a lot of movies in the 90s are set like 3 years later than they're actually filmed, and LA is a wasteland. So Demolition Man is one of those. And Wesley Snipes is a bad guy. Sylvester Stallone is a loose cannon cop. And he goes to fight Wesley Snipes to save a bunch of hostages. Due to reasons, the hostages all die. Sylvester Stallone gets blamed. And so he gets put in prison, but it's future cryo prison, where he's going to be frozen and then he's eligible for parole in 40 years or whatever. And Wesley Snipes also, because Wesley Snipes also did a lot of bad shit, so he's also put away. But, and then in the future, something happens and Wesley Snipes gets out. And the future is a beautiful, peaceful utopia, so nobody knows how to deal with a fucking psychopath murderer. And so they unfree Sylvester Stallone to go fuck him up. This is the premise of the and we are in a world where it's a very totalitarian world. Anything that is deemed bad for you is also deemed illegal. But also there's no real crime. The cops exist, but they don't have to deal with anything. And in fact, Sandra Bullock's an old timey, she loves all the old cop movies and things like that, and she wishes action would happen, and guess what? It does. It's 36 years in the future. There are a lot of people much older than 36. Some people have been cops the whole time. There is a cop in the opening 90s section who is still a cop and who still knew Sylvester Stallone in the future. And yet, so many basic concepts of how crime and criminals work and how policing might work are foreign to them. Not least of which is the idea of toilet paper is gone. Because it's a joke. There's a standing joke in the thing that there's no toilet paper because now there's something involving three seashells. And the joke is Sylvester Stallone doesn't have to know how to use the three seashells. We never find out how it is, but it's embarrassing for him because yeah, he doesn't know how to use the three seashells. Whatever. And people, Sandra Bullock, who's the one. She's literally got a poster on her wall for Lethal Weapon 3. She's obsessed with all of this stuff. She doesn't understand how police procedure worked or how guns work. Or she keeps, it's a running joke that she keeps using turns of phrase that aren't correct and frequently sound worse. So, like, instead of blowing them away, it's blowing them. Or instead of kicking their ass, it's licking their ass. And I'm just like, you watch move, and people are there. There are people who are easily in their 50s who are like, what are you even talking about? We couldn't possibly do basic police things. And I'm like, you're a cop who was a teenager or an adult when we started. You can't not know this. Hello? People who are alive today who are younger than 36 still understand how people talked 36 years ago. That was the 90s. Like, we're not confused about how the 90s was.
No.
And what I most hate about all of this, Star Wars is a little tricky because you got to grow up Luke and Leia to the right age. A little bit. A little bit. But in ones like this, just make it further out.
Yeah, right.
Just make it 80 years, 100 years, 200 years.
200 years, something. Yeah, would be good.
So, yeah, on a very personal level, that annoyed the shit out of me. But in general, it's a very silly movie. It has a whole bunch of things that you establish this, and therefore this doesn't make any sense.
You're right.
In Act 1, you did this. In Act 3, you did this, which wouldn't make sense because of what you did in Act 1. There's a whole Bullock and Stallone have a will-they-won't-they kind of thing. And very quickly on, it's they will. Except it turns out that in the future, we do sex virtually. Very Barbarella-ish, in a way. Because bodily fluids bad, and we establish it's like a gross thing
to them. Yeah, right. Which I remember get. That.
And then at the very and like he even tries to like kiss her or whatever. She's like, no, get out of my apartment. This is gross. And then at the end, he does kiss her without her consent, and she likes it. And I'm like, I mean, just do something analogous. Imagine something involving an exchange of bodily fluids that you, William, find gross, and that everyone in your society, with the exception of very specific kinks, find gross. We don't have to get into specifics. I am confident you can think of one. Imagine somebody just forcing that on you.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
I mean, it wouldn't be good because they forced it on you, but also it wouldn't be enjoyable. You wouldn't be, oh, that was surprisingly nice.
No. Yeah. Not
you
like
might,
that.
Maybe, over a long time, with a lot of effort and some therapy, could get to the point. I mean, we can all adjust, but not like from jump, ooh, that was actually, no. is a very silly movie. And it's the usual thing. It tries to explain stuff, and which makes me think about the explanation, and the explanation sucks. So anyway, that was the one I didn't want to talk very much about. Okay, this was technically a stealth episode of What Grinds My Gears. And What Grinds My Gears is the break in Star Wars. No, I want to talk about another movie that I had never heard of, and then I accidentally found, and I was very excited about, and then we watched. Finally.
Okay.
It's called The Prank. It is from 2022, and it stars, most notably, Rita Moreno. It is a thriller comedy, I guess. It's mostly just a comedy. I was under the impression it was sort of a thriller comedy, but it's set in a high school, and Rita Moreno is just an awful, horrific, old, mean science teacher. And our two leads, who are students, are mad at her over a thing, and they decide they're going to get their revenge by putting some shit out on the internet implying that a student who disappeared a couple years ago was murdered by her. And then the world kind of picks it up and runs with it. And she starts actually being investigated for this murder, and she gets fired and shit like that. And they're like, oh my God, we fucked this up really bad. It looks really fun. You know, it was great. It was a shockingly bad film.
Mm.
Like whenever we finish watching a movie and the credits are running, I turn to Trish and I say, what did you think?
Mm-hmm.
And I always say that. I don't give my opinion yet. Sometimes, depending on if I've commented or whatever, she can guess my opinion. But I don't say. I say, what did you think? When this one ended, I turned to her and I said, so, sweetie, what did you think of this terrible, horribly unfunny movie we just watched? With no fear that she would contradict me. Because it does happen. I'll hate something. And I was like, no. If she liked this, we're getting a divorce. But she didn't. She definitely didn't. And what really pained me is It had so many people in it that I really love. It had Rita Moreno. It had Keith David. I'm a huge Keith David fan. And then it had a whole bunch of 30s, 40s aged comedians that I really like. Betsy Solero was in it. Adam Clayton Hall, I think it was a bunch of a lot of ones I just know by face, but there were like a lot of comedians in it that I really like in sort of side parts and things like that. And it's really, really bad. It had like two lines that were that really stuck out as being funny. Oh, and it had I can't remember her name, but the woman who was the redhead on the U.S. Office. I cannot remember. I had it was on the tip of my tongue, but I lost it.
The did she play Kimmy Schmidt, that gal?
No.
Not Kimmy.
Before then, the older one who's basically a train wreck. She was the older one, and she was the one who was like, oh, she was the one who got rabies in a season one episode.
Well, I don't remember those at all.
And so while I'm watching this, being stunned at how terrible it is. It also had that thing where everybody's unlikable, so that was a problem for me from jump. But you know, I'm starting to get used to that. I hate that, and it makes me not like a movie. But I'm like, people, that's a thing we do in movies for some reason. So that one didn't hurt. But so I watch it, and I start fucking around on IMDb because I'm like, who made this movie, and have they made movies? Because this is bad.
Yeah.
And here's what I figured out, looking at the writer, looking at the director, looking at their histories, and also, again, knowing a lot of these actors and liking a lot of these actors that are in it, I have put together an image that I think explains why this movie is so bad. This movie was made by sketch and improv people. Across the board. Like a lot of these comedians that I like are specifically because I like them in sketch and improv stuff. The writer and the writers, well, one of the writers didn't ever really write anything, but has the same last name as the other writer, so you know. But the writers and the director have done individual episodes of TV shows mostly you've never heard of. Or a lot of short films, or in the case of the director, it was a lot of like they've directed awards shows and shit. And UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade, which is a big improv thing that has LA and New York, that you know, came up in a lot of places. And I know some of these actors, so I think a bunch of people who are just sketch and improv people made a movie. And a lot of the things that are shitty about this movie would have been fine in a sketch or a 4 minute thing. Because there are premises that are very funny for a sketch or for an improv scene that if you extend them at all and drill down into them, you're like, this doesn't make a goddamn bit of sense. And it doesn't hold up when you stretch it out. And like, here's another one. Nobody says a single sentence in this movie that a human would say. Except if you were in a sketch or doing an improv and you're like forcing the issue to move the premise along, to punch the joke, then you do it and it's fine. And but when you make it an hour and a half long, it's nonsense. It does strike me, also the two leads who were younger, so I didn't actually know them, were awful. But to be fair, I do not know if they were bad actors or if it was just terrible material. So I do not want to speak against them necessarily, but their performance, for whatever reason, was awful. I think the movie was probably a blast to make. And this is increased by the fact that it's one of those movies that during the end credits they did a bunch of outtakes and people seem to be having a lot of fun in it, especially Rita Moreno. I think She had a blast. She was just invited to do this and had a great time. And she does perfectly good with the material she has.
Right.
And the jokes that actually landed, and for the record, in case people are wondering, we were totally sober for this movie. The jokes that landed, I very much think were improvised. They were in those kind of scenes. There's a bit where two of the very side characters are talking about like the news coverage, and they get in this sort of rabbit hole of conspiracy theories where they're like, you know, they're like, they have this one, like in the Alps somewhere, there are these hidden banks where the bad guys put their money, and it's safe. And they're like, and the other one's like, yeah, cause you can't get in. It's like, yeah, you can't get in the mountains. It's hard to get up in the Alps, you know? And they keep going back and forth on these. And then one of them turns to the other and says, what are your thoughts on 9/11? And the other one says, like, looks a little bashful for a second, says, I didn't like it. And the other one's like, me neither. And, like, they're bonding over this.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, and that was really fun. And then actually one of those same characters, all the teachers in the teacher's line are looking up something, and it, because part of the smear campaign was to imply that the teacher and the student had a relationship, and maybe it was like a passion killing. And there's like fake texts and things that include these sort of poetry stuff from the student, supposedly.
Right.
And they're looking at it and they're like, wow, he was really tormented or whatever. And the janitor's in the back and he's like, that's Drake. Like, it's Drake lyrics. But then he walks away and one of the teachers looks back at him and says, Sir Francis Drake wrote that? And then in an outtake, there's a different one where that same teacher thinks it means that the missing student was actually Drake the rapper. He's like, so Wyatt was Drake? So these little bits were funny because, again, they were very clearly just little improv bits they were doing.
Yeah.
But, and I'm telling you these bits because there's no reason to watch this movie, people. And I feel bad because I like so many people that were involved with it. And I don't, I prefer to err on the side of like, this wasn't my kind of thing, but I don't think it's a coincidence that I hadn't heard of this movie until recently. It's terrible. Don't watch it. It's called The Prank. It is not available to stream for free. You can rent it for a few dollars, but don't do it.
Don't do it.
All right, let's get to that juicy, juicy email, who I believe is from West Bethlake.
Yeah, it is West Bethlake. Hi, Tony and William. Oh, hello, Beth.
Hi.
Thank you for that kind greeting.
Beth cracks me up because she appears to listen in spurts. Like, she'll go radio silent for months, and then suddenly she's commenting on every single episode and she'll email and everything. So I have learned to chill out when Beth takes a little bit of a powder for a while, because I'm like, she'll be back.
She asks, have you ever done something particularly special to mark a milestone, birthday, or anniversary? What was it? If not, would you ever like to? I feel like this is a question that'll get you in trouble if you don't remember ever doing a thing like that.
Or if your wife's in the same room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, William. I'll wait. And she heard you read it out loud. So if you don't remember, correct. You are.
That's correct. I remember once when I was younger, I said something about somebody. Someone wanted to do something around my birthday. And I was on the phone with them. I think I said, yeah, I mean, we don't really do very much around here, you know, for birthdays. And what I meant was, we don't like go to a big fancy restaurant, or we don't. And at that age, we really didn't even invite people over. But I mean, you know, mom would like bake a cake or something. And so, you know, we would do at least that. And then when we were real little, we did all kinds of stuff. People would come over. There'd be a lot of presents. But at the time I was talking to this friend of mine, it we, you know, aside from maybe having a cake at supper time or whatever, on the day, you know, we didn't really make a big deal of it. We get together down at the farm for birthdays and stuff now. But anyway, when I said that on the phone, it hurt my mom's feelings. I remember we had a kind of a, I kind of had to smooth that one over because she thought that I didn't think she cared about our birthdays, or that I'd forgotten all the cool things we did when we were little kids, or because I didn't appreciate, even though it was really only a cake at supper time, that that was mom slaved over that cake. You know, she baked it, she decorated it, everything. So yeah, I got myself in trouble that one time. When one of my brothers turned 50, we had a sort of a to-do down at the farm, but for the rest of us five kids, we never have. My sister, the last one of us, my sister, she's the youngest. She just turned 50 yesterday as we're recording this. So we're getting together on Saturday, but it's going to be like every other get-together we've ever had. So it's not going to be that different. Anniversary. No, I mean, like I said, when I was a kid, mom did things for everyone's birthdays. But you know, when I left home, you know, I didn't really have any money. I mean, I didn't have the resources to go do anything special on my or anyone else's birthday or any, an anniversary either, in my first marriage or any time. I think I just never, I'm not really in the habit of thinking, oh, this is, you know, a big, you know, a birthday that ends in a zero or an anniversary that ends in a zero or whatever. I'm just not in the habit of thinking of anything else other than say, well, let's go to dinner that night, or let's, or if we can't that night, let's do something on the weekend. We went to Minneapolis and watched the Twins play for Abby's birthday. I think that's probably the biggest thing we ever did for anything, birthday, anniversary, anything. I think that's the only thing I could think of.
See, I think I have the opposite situation. When I was younger and poor, I would do stuff for those because it was an excuse.
Oh yeah.
Like we can splurge because it's my birthday or it's our
Yeah.
anniversary.
Yeah.
Nowadays, if I want to do something, I just fucking do it. It
Yeah, right. So
doesn't need to be my birthday. I'm like, I want to
and
go out. Let's go out.
right, so what would be special, right? 'Cause you do it all the
Well,
time.
and also because ultimately I don't give a shit about birthdays. And not too much about anniversaries either. Okay. It's very weird for me because I think I grew up with some, like, we are generally raised to think you're supposed to celebrate those things.
Yeah, do something special.
It's a special occasion. And when I was little, it was a thing. When I was really little, a lot of it was just like I remember one year we did a Chuck E. Cheese birthday, and I invited one friend. And it wasn't because I didn't have other friends, although he was definitely my closest friend. I just didn't like big groups, and mostly my parents bought the birthday package or whatever, and that included X number of tokens, and it was a set amount. So I just had one friend, so we just split the tokens between us. It was a great time. And then there becomes an age where that's like when you're old enough, you're allowed to do sort of slumber parties. Then the birthday is an excuse to do slumber parties. And of course, your parents do stuff because you think, because they want, like, that's, you want to give your kids a birthday experience. You make them a cake or whatever. So my parents would always do that. And of course, as a young age, it's a bit of a power trip. Do you want to have a party? Yeah, cool, I can do that. And then as I got a little older, heading into tween and teen years, parties, especially boy-girl parties, became a thing. And so a birthday would be an excuse to sort of do that. And then we hit all the milestone birthdays. So there's the I can get my work permit, I can get my learner's permit, I can get my license, I'm a grown up. I can legally drink. I get a big break on my auto insurance. Basically 14 to 25, you got the milestones, and then it doesn't fucking matter. And then after that, there's the various over-the-hill milestones. So 30 is a big one because now you're not young anymore. Although 29 is a big one because it's the last year you are young. Things like this. And then 40, you might as well be dead, that kind of thing. As time has gone on, I give a shit about birthdays less and less and less and less and less and less and less. To the degree that sometimes we basically do nothing. Trish and I give each other multiple birthday presents because that is the only time we give each other presents. I mean, other than it is the only designated time we give each other presents. We don't do anniversary and we don't do Christmas. Mostly because Trish's birthday is too close to our anniversary and my birthday is too close to Christmas. So you'd have to come up with two sets of presents. And also we're busy figuring out Christmas, especially we're figuring out everybody else's fucking presents or whatever. And you know how I hate presents that you're required to give in general. But birthday, and we keep it pretty small. It's mostly just because we are both the kind of people who just like presents. You could wrap up anything and I unwrap it and I'm like, oh, cool, like whatever it is. So we try and come up with stuff. And I always said we were both really bad at getting each other presents. She's gotten really good at it. I still suck and it pisses me off. But we do some, like the last party I had for birthday. I was 29 and we had it in this house. You were probably there. Because we were married by that point, and I think you and I were friends by then. And it was a genuine birthday party. And like there were like a lot of people, and it was enough people that some people were doing stuff in this room, some people were doing stuff in the other room. That kind of fell away, at least in part because our house is no longer fit for company anymore. But I remember somewhere in there I did a surprise party for Trish where I just invited a lot of our friends and coworkers to the Peking buffet and I made her close her eyes and drove her around a little bit and then we went in for that and that was kind of fun. And I mean on occasion I've done things where I invite a handful of friends to a meal, but not really in the last few years. Sort of not at all. Like we always say, like, oh, your birthday, so what do you want to go out to eat? And sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's more convenient to not do it on the day, whatever. Don't really care. I'm at the point where I really don't care. I'm at the point where I don't look at the Facebook greetings when people do that, and I don't give them out. And I frequently forget people's birthdays and don't even remember to send them like text or whatever. There are some people like my mom who I know it would really crush them if I didn't, so I make sure I know that one and I get a hold of them then. But a lot of them I don't bother, and if I do, it's often just a little text to say I'm glad that you were brought into the world. Congratulations on living longer. But then there's people like my brother, they do a birthday week thing. Where they're doing all sorts of shit. Oh, they make a big deal out of birthdays. And this is part of why I feel bad, but because I don't give a shit about birthdays, I also kind of don't give a shit about other people's birthdays. And other people do give a shit about birthdays. And so then I feel like I'm treating them poorly. But I don't know how to make myself give a shit about others' birthdays, but not mine exactly. But we do on occasionally use birthdays and anniversaries as excuses, usually for big trips. Like the one to Hawaii was for our 20th anniversary. We are going, it has been decided. I have declared it. We're going to Europe for my 50th. But it's mostly like, I want to go to Europe again. That's a good reason to any. We were gonna go to Iceland There's also ones. So we've done a couple of things, not on the birthday, but because Trish has said, I want to do X before I turn Y.
Right, right.
So like the cruise, the first cruise, she's like, I want to. Oh, that one I think was she'd never left the country. And she was like, I want to leave the country before I turn 40. So we went on a cruise that took us to Canada. And so she had left the country. Another one was, I want to see the Northern Lights before I turn 50. Because she'd always wanted to see the Northern Lights. So we planned a trip. We were going to Iceland, which is a very good place to see the Northern Lights. And also we'd seen some other stuff and we're like, Iceland looks fucking cool. And we planned it for November of 2020.
Oh, no.
So when we go to Europe, when I'm 50, we'll be stopping by Iceland.
Sure.
And we sometimes do that kind of stuff. And we'll do, like, a tiny trip as a present is a thing we'll do. Like, your birthday present is we're going to go away to a hotel for the weekend or whatever. And we've done that a few times. Or for our anniversary, let's take a trip to one of the many cities that's around here that's just a few hours away. Like, we'll go to St. Louis, we'll go to Minneapolis, we'll go to Chicago, we'll go to, I don't know, this one.
Right.
And so we do that, but I don't think we really care. We do have things, like we're almost always go home to Trish's family for Memorial Day weekend, because Trish's birthday is May 31st, and her sister's is exactly a week before that, and that's all right around Memorial Day weekend, so frequently it is a celebration of both of those birthdays.
Right, right.
But we don't always. If there's a reason why we are doing so, like, I think we went to a convention one year that happened to be on that weekend. So we don't do it 100%, but that is common. I think it is awesome to have an excuse to celebrate or to have an excuse to give someone a gift. I also think it's made up dookie nonsense. So if that's the tool you need to do that stuff, if birthdays and anniversaries and occasions are the tool you need to celebrate someone or give someone a gift or spend time with family, awesome. Because I consider them so artificial and socially imposed, and because I have no problem doing fun shit because I want to, or giving you a gift because I want to,
yeah,
I don't care about it.
Yeah,
but for those who are not in that headspace, it's a very useful tool. It makes sure that you stay close to the people you love and you show them attention, at least on occasion, and so that's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't.
I mean, I think it's helped me and my siblings. I mean, we get together every so often, and it's usually around a birthday. Sometimes it's around on Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever, but it's usually around a birthday. So that's helped us. But I mean, we don't, aside from just going home and hanging out there, we don't like do anything special there or anything. It's just spending time, really.
Yeah. I think, and this is, I'm sure this is anxiety brain. I feel like when I do something because it's your birthday, or when I do something because it's Christmas, the implication is society has said this is when we do this. And if society didn't say that, I wouldn't do it. If society didn't tell me I had to, I wouldn't give you a gift. If society didn't tell me I had to, I wouldn't come visit you. If society didn't tell me I had to, I wouldn't go on a trip with you. And I'm not saying anybody believes that. I'm certainly not saying that's true. But there's part of me that worries I'm inferring that in the process. and it's definitely my mental issue, because I don't feel that when other people do that. I mean, sometimes right. I do, because sometimes somebody gives you a gift and you're like, you didn't think this through at all. You very clearly felt you had to.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, that happened amongst my family, and now my family, by and large, does not exchange Christmas presents anymore, because we just don't know each other well enough, and it was just buying random shit that nobody liked and feeling anxious about it. And I like that because nowadays sometimes I send them things at Christmas and sometimes I don't, and I don't worry about it, and I don't tie it to if they sent me anything or not. And in fact, I work now to do stuff that is like deliberately low stakes. Like last year, I just sent care packages full of like candy and weird treats and things, and just not with them in mind or anything, just fun shit. I
Sure.
bought some chocolates and I went to some international groceries and bought some weird shit. I just thought it was fun.
Nice.
And I enjoyed that, and it tells them I'm thinking about them, but it to me it hopefully doesn't make them feel like then they have to do something.
Right.
But yeah, I mean it probably stems from my anxiety brain, and I'm not anti these things, but I am dead neutral. Don't give a shit. So, I mean, people's mileage may vary. I don't know.
I'd probably
Most
do more
people's life.
things like that if I, if my income was such that it's like, oh, this is a thing that I can plan to do, two or three times a year or whatever for various things, then I probably would. I mean, we don't avoid doing big things or whatever. We're not like opposed to it. It's just. And it's not that we don't, sometimes I think we do have resources, but we're using them for something else. You know what I mean? So it's like, we just don't think in those terms. But like, I suppose if I was one of those people that had, was making more money than he knew what to do with, then I'd be, oh, hey, your birthday's coming up. Let's do this. You know? I mean, I'm sure I would think that way, but.
That to me even highlights a freakier part of it, because if you feel a pressure of societal obligation and you're in a position where it will put even mild financial strain on you,
Right.
that's fucked up. And
Yeah, right.
ultimately, no, but nobody wants that.
No,
Like, if you
right.
gave a gift to somebody and they found out it's gonna be a lean month because I got you this gift, they wouldn't want that gift.
No, that's right.
I
That's
mean, most people,
exactly
there are monsters in the world, but that's not
right. No, that's right, though. You're right about that.
and it used to, like, and it gets so weird because I grew up in a family where we would, at least in the earlier years, everybody got a gift for everyone. And in fact, with my in-laws, we still do that. But it really got out of hand after a while. But like, my mother will talk about one year, my grandparents, who were quite wealthy, got all the adult women fur coats, which is very expensive. I believe we've sort of figured out, and they were like $3,000 each or something, and it was just nuts. And of course, also something my mother didn't want at all. She'd never been a fur person. Even forget ethically, she just wasn't into it fashion-wise, but she also ethically wasn't into it. So whatever. And then a different year, she's talking to her mother on the phone. And I can say this because the woman's dead and also was really awful in her later years. And this is around the same time, but it's a different Christmas. And she's saying, we're not sure what's, do you have any suggestions of what you might like for Christmas? And my mother says, well, because this is like the 80s or whatever, and she's like, we've been thinking it's time we got a VCR. We don't have one. That could be a good one. And my grandmother, aghast, was like, we weren't planning on spending that kind of money. Which is like, just like 2 years ago, you got me a fucking fur coat. What the hell? And like, when you add those complications in, and I hate that you got to, because if you're lucky and if you think ahead, like throughout the year, and I do this now, I actually have a thing where I keep notes on gifts if I see something. Because when Christmas comes around, I've forgotten the thing that I saw in May.
Right.
So I started doing that. But that's cool when you find something, like, oh, this is great. But there's always like the one relative where I'm like, and it's not the same every year, but I'm like, I don't know. Nothing here really. So you get something and you're like, I hope it's good enough. But there's nothing behind that gift. That's
Yeah.
the, I found something that I don't think you'll hate, and it was the best I could do. Enjoy.
Right.
It's not something I necessarily like or something I necessarily think you should have. It was the least offensive option. Like, to me, that is just on a gut level so antithetical to the concept of gifts and giving
Right.
that it grosses me out. And when you add to it the idea, like, And it's not as much true now, but there used to be a thing where our income and our general quality took a dip in December because we knew we were going to spend several hundred dollars in total on everybody we got gifts for, and several hundred dollars was not insignificant.
Right.
And we didn't spend a lot, but it added up because there were lots of different relatives and friends and things. And that's terrible. I hate that. And again, if you're not having that problem, if it's not hard for you to find gifts, if it's not a strain on you, and if this is a useful way that you can show people you care via this mechanism, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do that. And especially if you don't want to do that, fuck that shit.
Yep.
I apparently feel very passionate about this.
Apparently.
I do. I love giving gifts. Gifts is one of my up there love languages. Usually gifts of food. I have a fun thing with my gaming group. Every time I would go to the store and buy some candy, and I usually bought weird cheap candy because I thought that was funny, like weird gummy lizards or whatever, and they always ate them, and they had a good time with them and all that. And I would just bring them to gaming because I just thought it was fun, and there was no obligation. It wasn't like we were doing that all the weeks, and sometimes I didn't do it, but I just did it, and I really enjoyed that.
Right.
And I enjoy now going shopping and finding a treat for Trish, and I don't always do it. And sometimes I'm like, I've really been giving her like a lot of candy. Maybe I should stop, things like that. But when I do it, it's fun. And it's way less fun if I feel like I need to.
We went to Medieval Times recently. That was a celebration of my graduation and stuff. That was fun.
Absolutely. And under no circumstance did I feel I needed to do that. I felt zero sense of obligation because most people don't give their elderly friends graduation presents.
No.
And certainly not on that scale. That was not an insignificant expenditure.
No, it was nice.
And earlier in life, I wouldn't have been able to afford that. As is, it's not a financial strain or anything in that sense. But I did it wholly because I was like, I'm proud that William did this, and I really think he'll love this. And selfishly, I will love it too, because I'll be going with him. I didn't give you a trip to Medieval Times for you and Abby. I could have. I didn't.
Yeah,
I did it for you and me.
Yeah. It was great. It was really fun.
And it was great. And I felt really good about it.
Yeah.
I felt really from the moment. And I told you, there's the episode of the podcast where I say I figured out your graduation present. And it was like a year and a half before. And I told you I figured it out and that you were going to love it. And I was excited. And I was excited for a whole year and a half.
I did love it.
And it worked really well because it didn't feel like a gamble either. I was like, I mean, maybe I won't love it. I didn't know for sure, but I'm fine with that. But I'm like, William's going to love this. William's going to love this in principle. William's going to love this in practice. And it was the epitome of what a gift is to me.
Yeah.
No sense of obligation. I'm specifically for you. I am confident you're going to love it. I am confident you would not do it for yourself. Bonus, yeah. I'm going to have a fun time.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of gifts I want to give.
Good one. Good
and one. I love that kind of stuff. And I'm also a very lazy person, but I sort of try and push myself, pay attention and do that, because I'd rather do that than save it for Christmas or whatever.
Right.
That tone of like, yeah, it's Christmas, so I kind of have to get you something. Doesn't mean I don't want to. But I kind of have to, as opposed to at random, where it's like, I definitely didn't have to. I just wanted to.
Right.
So, if you want to give us a gift, please email us. themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Don't wait for Christmas. Don't feel obligated, except do it. So if me saying that makes you feel obligated, I'm fine with that. But for just one email a week, you can keep poor William off the streets. Also, go to the blog and tell us your feelings on gifts. I don't think I'm the norm. in my feelings on gifts. And as I said, occasions can be a very useful tool in order to do awesome things.
Yep.
And if that is useful for you, then that is awesome. I am never annoyed that people get into Christmas or get into their birthdays or get into their anniversaries. That is great. It's just not for me. So tell me your takes on that. You can tell William too, I guess, but I don't think he reads the comments anymore. I don't know. To be fair, I get notifications when there's comments, and I don't think you do, but, but also, yeah, so go to the blog at magicaltalkinghat.com and tell us about that. And also, email us. And it's going to be a long time for us. Before, this will just be a week for you guys, but for us it will be 2 weeks, and it'll be a long time.
Long time.
But then I'll be in Oregon, and so hopefully you can see the cool place where we hang out. In the meantime, I don't know.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.